You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Give us land to live righteously!
That's right, it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, episode 32. Going to be visiting with a sex therapist in the second and third block, Emil Harker.
We're talking about sex.
Yeah, so sex is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So get prepared for that. It's myself, Richie T.
And I'm Ashley Garvey Smith.
Don't forget the Garvey. Wanted to share this email. This was sent to Richie at theculturalhall.com via our website, theculturalhall.com.
Okay.
Love the podcast, says Matt. I'm a convert since the Keith Stubbs episode, and I like that people have started to do this.
Yes, thank
you. Either telling us that they're a lifer or a convert. Lifer if you've listened to every single episode, or a convert if you came in at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
Said, been a convert since the Keith Stubbs episode. My relationship with the Cultural Hall started out by looking for something that I could listen to at work that wasn't a drag on my spirit, but ended up finding something that consistently uplifted it. So that's a bargain.
Oh, good.
I actually think that it makes me a better person, so thank you for that. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
He says, my main point is that I listen to the podcasts at work, but Twitter is totally blocked. By the time I get home, though, I've forgotten everyone's plugs. You might put these on Facebook, but I don't use that thing.
Facebook is the devil.
Can you start putting folks' Rammy Umpton plugs on each podcast page? That would be rad.
That's a great idea.
I set out to increase Brittany, who does articles of news with us, the anxious white virgin.
Yes.
I set out to increase Brittany's Twitter followers by an additional 25% because she only had 4.
Yeah.
But now I don't remember how to add her. Anyway, keep it up, brothers and sisters. Matt.
Great.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
I like it.
So, with that, we'll get into the second block of the Cultural Hall with Emil Harker. It's a sex therapist.
We're talking about sex.
It's sex.
All right.
Coming back. Hey, it's me, Richie T, here, and if you don't listen to anything else that I'm about to say, listen to this. Peter Breinholt, Friday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. at Layton High School. There, now you can stop listening. But if you want to keep listening, you'll find out what this benefit concert is for. It's to benefit Whiteside's Music and Arts program and their Shakespeare program. You can go online to whitesidespta.com to buy tickets. They're only $3.50. Or you can call 801-402-3600. Tickets will be available the night of the event for only $3. You got to do it. They'll have a silent auction beforehand. Doors open at 6:30. It's Friday, March 23rd, 7 p.m. Peter Breinholt, that's guest number 6 from the Cultural Hall. Go, do this, now.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
That's right. It is episode 32 and the second block of the Cultural Hall. Thank you very much for joining us. And in here in the Cultural Hall with us is Emil Harker.
That's right. Emil Harker.
And Emil is a sex therapist. So as was mentioned in the little warning to this episode today,
right,
we are going to be talking about sex.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about...
It exists.
Yeah, it is an existing feature of marriages.
Yes.
Not all marriages, I presume.
Surprise!
but it is something that we're going to talk about. Something that I want to say thank you to everyone who responded on our Facebook page.
Right.
And also who sent emails to richie@theculturalhall.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to most of those. We'll get to most of those. But I want to get a chance to get to know Emil a little bit. Emil, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, where do I start? I actually come from a large family of boys, the normal, you know, Mormon family, 8 brothers. My mom and dad kept trying for a girl. I think they just tapped out after, you know.
After 8.
Well, I have 8 brothers, so there's 9 of us. There's one set of twins. I'm a twin.
Oh, wow.
And, all boys. So, and everybody usually says, oh, your poor mother.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't, I don't hold anything against her because she should take the medication she's taken because we have driven her absolute nuts.
And it got to be a pretty tough household of boys, too.
Yeah,
oh, you bet.
It's all boys. It's fists.
Well, you bet. You know, we had a lot of posters hung in our rooms, not because we loved these different bands and people, but because we had to cover the holes in the wall somehow, right? So, yeah, we bunch of boys. It's going to be kind of rowdy sometimes.
And where do you fall in the whole thing?
Right in the middle. So me and my twin brother share the middle spot.
Yeah, oh, you guys are middle children.
Yeah, the middle
children. Are you the classic middle children?
Kind of, yeah, because I'm kind of like I'm always into making sure the family's staying together, doing things together, mm-hmm. you know. And then now look at me. I'm like the therapist, right?
Right.
What does your twin do?
He works for Maverick. He is the marketing director there. And so he is like artistic genius. So
for Maverick, the
Maverick
gas station?
Gas station. Cool. Adventures First Stop.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I sound like those commercials on Maverick, it's not me, it's Ernie.
Yeah.
Right.
Emil and Ernie.
Emil and Ernie, the twins, right.
Are you guys all E's? Is every boy
E? No, that'd be too many. Yeah. So Darren, Sean, Reese, Emil, Ernie, Lance, Matthew, Joe, and Gary. So that's all nine real quick.
I bet your mom couldn't do that.
Yeah.
She just calls us different names. Yeah. I know where you live. I'll find you. I know your name.
Born and raised Mormon?
Born and raised Mormon. Grew up in different places, but, you know, big city Chubbuck, Idaho is where I did some hell raising in the younger years. Then we moved to Farmington when I was in junior high, and I've been in Utah most of the time except for one of my 2-year mission stint in Canada.
What part of Canada?
The Great White North, Winnipeg, Manitoba. I didn't even know that place existed until my mission.
Are people up there?
I know. I thought there was this big old white fence that said, "Do not trespass. You are now entering the Great White North."
Yeah. I thought it was just polar bears and penguins.
Yes.
Mm. People.
What is up there? A lot of people?
Oh, yeah. Just like here.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine it's just like here.
Well, they have to say things like, about the house. Mm-hmm. So they have an accent, right? And everything is ends with A. That means, you know what I'm saying?
A.
Yep, that's right. So that's about the difference. It was
But when I think of the Great White North, I think of not a lot of people, and I think of like igloo, walk 2 miles, igloo.
Right, that's way, way, way north. But in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and you've got Winnipeg, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, all along just above the border, there's not just above like 10 miles, but I'm saying, you know, hundreds of miles up north. There's the climate's not that different from here. Like, it gets hot, mm-hmm. So you're riding your bike all around, you're sweating like crazy, and then of course in the winter it's freezing cold.
Mm-hmm.
So we're walking around on our missions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got golf balls in our hands because you can't really knock with thick mittens.
Yeah, you break your knuckles.
Right, so we just tap, 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 sure. And the people look through the window saying, "It's too cold.
We're not opening our door."
We're like, we're on the outside, okay?
We know it's cold.
We need to get on the inside. So it was great.
So how? When was that? Give us a time reference.
90. Yeah, that's right. I was like 90-something, yes. Then I went to school after that, got my degree in family studies at Weber State. And that's when I first realized that there's actually people get paid to listen to people and talk to people called therapists. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
This is great.
Did you immediately know you wanted to do sex therapy, or was that something that evolved?
Okay, to be honest with you, my first passion was food. I wanted to be a chef. And so I worked at some really cool restaurants and stuff like that.
Like what?
New Yorker Club down in Salt Lake. Loved it. But I realized that if I'm going to be a family guy, then working from 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night every day and on holidays, I'm going to be a pathetic father.
Yeah.
So I thought, gosh, I love food. I'm going to keep my love affair for food going, but I got to find something that I can do that's going to actually make me a better person, maybe contribute to society a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so when I went back to school, that's kind of what it evolved into, is a therapy. So I love it. I love relationships, and it kind of evolved into marriage therapy, and now I do sex therapy because the reality is no one's talking about sex, especially in our conservative culture.
Right.
And so no one's getting really good information. I used to work at LDS Family Services in Ogden, and everybody who had sexual issues would just start coming to me, and they'd just start pointing everybody to me, and just because most people aren't comfortable with talking about sex. And so if your therapist isn't comfortable talking about sex, who is?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's talking about it. It's a huge issue. We need to start talking about it some more.
So go ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
So growing up with 9 brothers.
Right.
And in an LDS family.
Right.
Did your family talk about sex? Did your mom or dad tell you about the birds and the bees?
They did. You know, because my mom and dad, they grew up on farms in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So sex ed was look out the window, watch the cows.
See what them cows are doing?
See, that's what you're going to be doing.
I don't know.
So they really thought it was really important for us to learn about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when they do the maturation, we're going to be talking a little bit about, you know, sex ed, right?
Sure, fifth, sixth grade.
Yes, fifth grade.
Your right.
body is beginning to experience changes.
So guess what? My mom decides to come.
Yeah, to yours?
Then, to ours.
Instead of your dad?
This was before, like, a lot of parents were involved.
Oh, and so, okay.
Because I am wearing my kids, we were required to have a parent there.
See, I had to wear the hat of shame. You know,
yeah.
I am there. In, with,
like,
and they
have
these huge classes, like 100 kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm there with my mom, and my mom wants to talk about everything. And so I'm just like withering in my chair going, you've got to be kidding me. So mom was really open, making sure that we weren't going to be shocked by the real world. So that
right.
was so helpful.
Tell them about uncircumcised.
I know, totally. yeah.
Not
so it was. I think that was the seed was planted way back then that this was something important. And I remember having a conversation with my grandma about sex education, and I think some of that attitude is still lingering with us today. And that is, if you begin to talk about it, people will know that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they know it exists, they're going to do something with it.
Right.
And that's kind of what the fear is going on right now.
Right.
There's a lot of fear about, if we start talking about this, people are going to start to think about it.
Teenagers
and then,
are all going to go out and have sex because now they know it exists.
Yep. Before this lesson happened, before we even talked about it, they were clueless.
Right.
Now,
no idea.
Yep.
Now they got these hormones that just happen, bang, because we start talking about it.
So you bring up that, and that correlates to what's going on here in Utah. I know there's a lot of people that listen to this outside of Utah, but
mm-hmm.
specifically here in Utah, there's a bill that got passed through the legislature, House Bill 363. And probably, if you live anywhere in the United States, you've heard about it because
yep.
it's right.
more than just local press. It's been national press. But what it essentially is... it's removing, essentially removing sex education from schools. They can either teach it and it has to be abstinence only,
mm-hmm.
or they cannot teach it at all.
At all.
So there's that choice, right.
The way that it used to be is that parents would have the opportunity. I think it was still abstinence only in Utah, though I'm not positive about that.
It wasn't abstinence only. It was abstinence modified or abstinence plus. So
right.
they would talk about abstinence as being the way,
mm-hmm.
but then they would also go in more than that in talking about contraception and stuff like that. So it was the primary focus was abstinence, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like abstinence only.
And parents could opt in to have their children
yeah.
go to those
yeah,
courses.
You had to sign a permission slip.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this now proposes is that they can opt in or they can decide whether or not to even teach sex ed
mm-hmm.
in schools. And if they do teach sex ed, that it's abstinence only, and any time that anyone talks about, if I was a student in the class and I wanted to come up and talk about homosexuality, the teachers aren't allowed to answer any sort of questions,
right.
field any sort of questions about it, or about anything with
contraception
or sex out of marriage.
That's right.
What kind of impact do you think that has?
I think the people in this culture are going to really appreciate this kind of, I don't know if it's a joke or reality, but this is kind of the attitude. Small town, Utah, right? The adults decide what we're going to do is we're going to really reduce the amount of teen pregnancies because it's a real big problem in this small community.
Right.
Sure.
So what they decide to do is to take anything that would have any association with sex and remove it.
Mm-hmm.
So they took all the condoms and they put all the condoms under the counter. So if you needed a condom, you'd have to ask specifically for that.
Right.
And so what happened was, unbeknownst to them, this shockingly, pregnancy rates started going up. It's amazing.
Wait a minute.
Yes,
I know.
What?
Right. And their explanation was, Satan is really powerful now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know what? A lot of the fear about this legislation is there's a huge moral component. And I think sometimes in an effort to try to sustain a morality base, value-based education, what's happening is fear starts to hijack reason.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when that happens, redundant as that is,
yeah.
is now the fiber of reason, logic, and understanding, the light of truth, starts to go out because there is no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make decisions based on poor information, why would we be surprised that the outcomes are turning out crappy?
Right.
If you think about it, if you talk about it, if in the bills, I hear all these people talking about, well, if you talk about it, then you're advocating it.
Right.
What the crap is that? We're not advocating it. We're talking about it. We're putting light on it. It doesn't mean we're promoting it. And so this language of advocating, promoting, that is just political mumbo-jumbo garbage to push their agenda. It isn't about understanding and making good choices based on information. It isn't. It's dictating, actually, exactly what they're trying not to do.
Exactly.
Sure. And I get where I was going back to. Sorry about that. So the church teaches that we should be informed. Intelligence is the only thing that we take out of our lives with
us.
And so I think that a lot of people would assume that this bill is kind of being backed by the LDS Church.
Right.
And some people...
Because it's so conservative.
It's so conservative. But I don't think that it is something. I think that the church, if they were pressed about it, would say, you know what? We want people to be informed. We would like you to not have sex out of marriage. That's something that we've said from the very beginning.
Right.
Read in the scriptures, yes, but, you know, be informed. People should have knowledge about the consequences if they decide to have premarital sex or sex in general, you know, once they're inside marriage. Because some of these things apply to if your partner had, you know, was sexually active before you got married, those things apply. So... You know, people, I think, get really upset saying that this is the church, but it's kind of my feeling that some of these people, some of these legislators are like, you know what, I know that this is the cause that they would have me do. And
right.
So they kind of take this righteous mission where they're
right.
like, it's abstinence only or don't, you know, it needs to be taught in the home. And
right.
I just think it's so far off
right.
base where it almost seems like that
right.
kind of zealousness where
right.
you lose reason.
Any kind of moral support. So if we're trying to increase values and morals, which are great for society, okay, you think about it. If we don't have morals and values like that, or standards, rules, even laws that govern sexuality, then what happens is families become so twisted and broken. I work with them all the time in therapy, and it really creates a poor environment for kids to grow up. There's so much instability in their lives. So no one is going to disagree, I would hope, that morality is healthy for society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's just check that off the top of the box. No one should be debating that. Now, given that we all agree that morality should be supported, promoted, advocated, okay, what are we going to do about reality?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
We still, all of us, promote choice. That is something that we should always have. We should always be able to make our own choices. But like you were saying, Richie, if we're not getting good information, what kind of choices can we make?
So what do you think the ideal is? What's your solution to this?
You know,
how should sex ed be taught or not be taught in the homes or in the school? What if you can take all this, all the sides, if you got to pick, it's Emo saying, here's how it's going to be, state of Utah and the nation, how should it be?
So I think it should be mandated by law that parents should teach their kids.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. I think that should be mandated by law for parents to teach the kids. But now you look at it. What is the reality? Given reality, so Emo hops off his pixie pony from the rainbow into reality, right? And in the reality, it says parents aren't comfortable talking about this.
Right.
Sure. Some.
Right.
I have no problem talking about it with my kids.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But so many don't. And so if we just leave it up to the parents to educate their children, number one, do they have good information? We're assuming they have good information.
Sure.
Some don't. So now, if the parents aren't feeling comfortable with it, then the education actually ends up at school. And if the teachers aren't talking about it, where do you think they're getting information?
Oh, yeah. Internet, friends.
Right. And Ashley, what kind of information are you finding on the internet about sex?
Really horrible information.
Right. This is not quality
research-based
information.
No. I've heard that if you...
Right.
Right.
So we're not getting good information. Then people are going to make decisions based on the information that they have. So given reality, if you look at the permission slip that is currently being used now, parents already have the choice to opt out of any of those issues that are being taught in sex ed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like yes or no. It's, I don't want my kids to learn about contraception. Check the box. We already have that choice now as parents.
Right.
It is mandated that all parents have to sign a permission for their kids to get it. So I don't know what value this bill is supposed to create when I can see down the road that we're going to have misinformation, and if we don't have good information, we can't make good decisions.
Interesting. We've got some more questions for you. We're going to come back in the third block. We've got questions from people on Facebook. Talk about more about sex. We'll leave this bill alone because we still don't know whether or not the governor is going to sign
right.
it and everything like that.
Right on.
So coming back in the third block, more of your questions here on The Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 5576 to book your shoot today.
All right, it's time for block three, third block of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 32 with Emil Harker. Thank you so much for being here with us. And one move past that House bill now, get to questions from Facebook and ones that we received. When we said, hey, we're talking about sex, a lot of people, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being willing to engage in something, in a conversation about something that isn't talked about enough within the Mormon church.
Absolutely.
Right.
Let me get your speculation. Why do you think it's not talked about?
I think there's a lot of fear associated with it. It's the taboo catch-22 kind of thing. Because,
but we all have it, so what's the taboo? What's the fear?
Well, the fear is that where do you put the boundaries? Where do you put the rules? And so it can create a great big debate about what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are... I think a lot of people look at the church as the definitive answer for specific things without thinking for themselves.
Right.
And so, you know, you teach them correct principles and let them govern themselves. We've heard of that. So, so that's what I do a lot in therapy is I try to help them. What are the principles? I'm not a dictator of what shall be done and what shall not be done in the bedroom, but does it create greater unity and closeness for the two of you? Not for the one of you, for right. the two of you.
Is the majority of what you get when people come in just going, she doesn't want to have sex with me, or he doesn't want to have sex with me? Is it that kind of stuff, or what?
I would say that is the majority.
Mm-hmm.
33% of women, based on recent research, is that women have a low enough sex drive that it begins to cause problems in other areas of their life. That's called hypoactive sexual desire disorder. And so what we're saying is there's ebbs and flows of sexual desire, okay? Women are much more complex than men. And so when...
Yeah, men, it's
really?
Like, yeah, please.
Women are complex?
Yeah.
What?
Now,
we're simple.
How about
all we
now?
Have to do is give us what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that today? I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know what we're talking about. So what was it?
Sorry, I distracted you. So
where are we
like,
going, Rich?
Oh, now
where
my
we going,
mind's Rich? Gone to this whole thing. No, so they come in and they're like,
right.
Oh, hey, we got the issues.
Right.
You're saying women had a sex drive that's low. Sorry.
Right. And if there's low sex desire, and that we can't say that's always just the women, because
right.
that's sometimes
sure.
the
mm-hmm.
guys too. But in general, most people will kind of resonate with, yeah, you know, my wife's not in the mood. Well, as a therapist, I'm trying to help them identify what are the barriers that keep them from being able to have that part in their life going good. Because it's so interesting that if sex isn't going good in a relationship, 50 to 70% of their stress and their problems are about sex.
Mm.
So they're arguing more, there's more conflict, they're less patient with each other. It is just a landslide of bad stuff in a relationship when sex isn't going good.
Mm.
Now, you compare that to relationships that are really healthy and going really good, then the added value in a relationship, they say, is about 15 to 20% when sex is going good in the relationship.
Hmm.
So it's not the end all be all.
Sure.
But when you think about the ramifications, if it's not going good, you got to get it right. Otherwise, life gets really miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So I help people identify those barriers and then help them overcome those barriers in a way that creates greater unity and closeness in the relationship. Because I believe that if husbands and wives are rock solid, then that creates a great environment for the family to stay close. And it creates greater security and stability for kids to grow up and become whatever they can be.
So I want to talk about something that happens a lot in the church, in the LDS church. I know my mom was really open with me, and I'm thankful for that. But in Young Women's and in other programs, you're taught sex is bad.
Right.
And a lot of parents, sex is bad, do not have sex. So what happens is a lot of young women get married.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're like, this is so bad. And they feel like they're doing something bad when
right.
they're having sex with their husbands.
Right.
So my question's twofold.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, what can parents and church leaders do so we don't instill that sex is bad, that
exactly,
it's a good
yeah.
thing? And then the second part is, if a married woman is struggling with this, where she thinks, oh, I'm doing something bad.
Right.
What can she do?
Okay. I'll try to remember both these things because my ADD kinetics hijack me, okay? But the first thing is how do we prevent this from happening in the first place? I think that when we really, really look at what prophets have already said and leaders of the church have already said about it, there's great information out there. It's not being used very much. So when we talk about how wonderful, great, and important sex is, we don't talk about that much. We use the scare tactic.
Right.
You're going to go to hell if you start thinking nasty thoughts.
Yeah.
I know. So we don't even talk about it. And then one of the things that's a problem, because we're not talking about it, because we're too afraid that if we start talking about it before you're married, what's going to happen?
They're going to go have sex.
They're going to start exploring.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what I think we need to do, let me back this up a second. Sexual tension and that anxiety associated with it is actually like the fuel to the fire. So guys and girls are dating. It's getting serious. So they start playing that tug of war with the moral boundaries.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because
oh, this is okay.
And so what they do is okay. They don't want to make the other person feel bad mm-hmm. and withhold and withdraw, because that can create some conflict and pain. So they're dancing with this line, getting closer and closer and closer to sex. Mm-hmm. If we could just say, you guys are going to be having sex, just chill. Imagine the conversation went like this. You know what? I desperately want to have sex with you, and I know you want to have it with me. We're going to have it in a little while. So let's just chill out and just get to know each other better. Oh, we can do that? We don't have to keep trying to go a little further and a little further and a little further, dancing on the edge of despair and hell? No. We can pull back and enjoy each other a lot more, because we're going to be having amazing sex later.
Mm-hmm.
We're given the right attitude. But what do you do when you miss that opportunity?
Right.
Right? True story. My wife is at girls' camp. It's late at night. The young women's leaders are sitting around the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
While the young women are blending into the shadows behind, listening, right? Mm-hmm. And so what are the young women's leaders talking about? Their honeymoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gets very quiet. The crackle of the fire and the ears perk up, right? And so the young women are just hungering on, hanging on every word. And they're talking about how dirty they felt after having sex. How they cried in the shower, feeling ruined. And I'm going, okay, do you see there's the problem right there?
Yeah.
If people were prepared more, and I think it would be so helpful, and I'd be totally willing to do this, is create a program. I already got the program created. If the church would help me with this, it'd be awesome.
Sure.
But it's a training program to help people get the right attitude about sex
mm-hmm.
in advance of getting married. One of the prophets said something like, most divorces occur because of sex.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's because the honeymoon was a crappy experience.
Right.
Sure.
Think about it.
Yeah.
The guy's expectations and the girl's expectations.
Totally
not even on the
different.
Same page. Right,
right.
Ashley? Right?
Totally
She's
different.
Thinking romance novel.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure.
He's going to hold me forever.
Yeah.
He's going to tell me everything I've ever wanted to hear. We're going to be in each other's embrace for hours.
Yeah, no.
And he's thinking, we're going to get a pole dancing. We're going to get the licorice panties out. This is going to be freaking awesome. Total train wreck, right?
Yeah. Right,
boom.
Yeah.
So we need to manage expectations based on reality and get the dialogue going before the honeymoon so we don't have a crash and burn.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had some good education, which brings me to the second piece, the anecdote or the antidote, not anecdote.
No, not
I've
an
got
anecdote.
Too many stories already, right? The antidote for this is perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person's feeling dirty, bad, pull back, get a helicopter view of what's going on. Why is sex the best thing that's ever been invented in a relationship? If there's too much guilt and too much shame, what happens is women begin to dissociate what they're experiencing and feeling from their bodies. So they kind of their mind goes somewhere else, like, oh, I got to get the trash taken out tomorrow morning, or I've got, and they allow themselves to become distracted, which creates a barrier in the relationship. When if they really knew how so important sexual intimacy is in the relationship as an ingredient, not as the end-all be-all,
sure,
but as an ingredient, she can become more fulfilled sexually and emotionally. He's more satisfied sexually and emotionally. The relationship is better. Problems that come into their life are now taken with a grain of salt. These tire rippers of life now become little speed bumps. It makes life so much smoother when husbands and wives value sexual intimacy, and we're just not getting taught that enough.
But how do you remove yourself from it? Because, I mean, I hear what you're saying. If you can get a better perspective, but if, right, you know, you're in a relationship and you're like, I still feel dirty, or this is terrible, and it's not as easy, I don't think, as to be like, hey, don't feel that way. Try and, right, see it from a bigger perspective.
I'm going to put a great plug for a friend, Laura Brotherson.
Okay.
She wrote an amazing book called And They Were Not Ashamed. Very LDS perspective. And even though it's an LDS perspective, any conservative faith will totally enjoy this because it really puts things into perspective where sexual intimacy is an important part of personal and relational success. And so read that book. It's a fabulous book. It's like I would call that the introductory book for sexual intimacy in marriage. I think it should be required reading. Then once they get through that and they still have questions, they need to be coached, and there needs to be kind of a forum for people to have discussions about sexual intimacy. Because if they're not talking about it, if no one feels comfortable sharing these kinds of things, then things can get kind of stagnant in the relationship.
Right.
We want to avoid that because expectations and drives are still present. And if stagnation takes place, what happens is the temptation windows start to open, distractions start to take place, and eyes begin to wander, hearts begin to wander, and then, bang, you're in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Do you offer advice for non-LDS clients? Are you just a therapist who happens to be Mormon?
I'm a therapist that happens to be Mormon, yeah.
Do you give different advice for members of the church as opposed to non-members of the church? Do you find that your advice differs?
My advice doesn't differ. I use value-based decision-making. And you know what's interesting is sometimes in our narrow-minded view of being LDS, we think we have the market on values and morals. We don't. You know, all faiths, the conservative faiths, you know, understand and believe in values, principles, standards.
No, they don't. Come
I know.
On, really?
We're the only ones that have this. Because, you know, history has demonstrated time and time again that morality and virtue and fidelity contribute to healthy society and happier people. So, yeah, you just got to keep the big picture, your mind open about how there are so many beliefs out there, but the values and principles don't change. So I help people identify what it is that they truly want. That's first. I'm not going to prescribe, no, this is what you really want. Mm-hmm. You need to have this and this and this, or your relationship's a failure. Talk to the couple. What do they really want? What kind of a sexual style do they want to have in their relationship? My sexual style is going to be different than anybody else's sexual style. They can find out with their own. Yeah. You don't know, Rich. Come on. You got a camera in my room. What's the deal? I'm now nervous. So everybody has sexual style. You help them identify what that sexual style is and then get them to talk about it. I had a couple just the other day. I was so excited. He's had pornography issues for years and years and years and years, and which has led to some infidelity, and their relationship is just, I mean, it's been hanging by a thread for a long time. And I talked to them about the values of fidelity and how they can truly be satisfied if they focus on their relationship as their primary source of sexual fulfillment instead of him going out somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And he just was convinced that his sexual drive was so powerful that he just had to.
No, you don't get it. I'm like a locomotive. You can't stop this.
You can't stop this love train.
Right?
So he was totally convinced of that, and so he's justifying all this baloney.
Right.
Well, she became more and more resentful.
Sure.
She can't compete with these women. Right?
Right.
So she starts pulling and pulling away, which of course justifies him saying, well, if you're not putting out, well, I got to do this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they finally got to the situation where things were really, really crappy. These guys aren't LDS, but they were suffering from the problems of making decisions, you know, based on hedonism and self-gratification instead of values and principles.
Mm-hmm.
So to tie the story together, I had him start working on developing emotionally intimate relationship with her, spend more time talking to her, cut out the pornography. Make whatever decisions he needed to make to get that out of his life. And when he started making that kind of a commitment to her, she felt valued and appreciated. So now they're talking about how they are discovering, for the first time, their sexual relationship in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? They're talking about what's working, what's not working sexually. And I don't care about the nitty-gritty. That doesn't work for me at all. What does work for me is their discussion, their dialogue.
Right.
They're talking about what's working and what's not working. I went, you guys got it. You found the holy grail of love.
Can pornography be a part of a healthy relationship?
I'm going to say no right off the bat.
Okay.
Okay? And I'll tell you why. Research shows that women and men can be stimulated from pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. However, when you start including information that is just designed to get the arousal going, we're using external things, and we open up the opportunity for jealousy, for example, you use pornography to get going. Okay, both of you are turned on. Well, now that the pornography is turned off because you're both getting it on, her mind is so much easier to wander than his. So she starts to wonder, is he thinking of me or is he thinking of her?
Right.
See, now, although they're having sexual intimacy, they are losing emotional intimacy. Mm-hmm. So I know on Oprah and on so many other shows, they talk about, oh, this new research that came out about how pornography is helping in relationships. And I go, it does. It does help with the arousal part.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to the relationship than just the arousal. When we add things that distract from the marital bond, we open ourselves up to disappointment, hurt, jealousy, anger, animosity, resentment, conflict. Okay, we're going downhill fast.
So here's a question that kind of ties in with that. It's not pornography related, but I actually had someone ask me the question. Can I say the O word?
Orgasm.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah.
Oprah? Like,
yeah.
Not Oprah. All right. Oreo?
So this is what she asked. Okay. She said, I cannot have an orgasm unless I'm fantasizing. Is right. this a bad thing?
Well, here's the thing. Imagine if he knew that. Okay?
Sure.
So let's say that's just private for her. If he knew that, what would that do to a guy? Richie, can you even imagine what that would be like?
It would be demolishing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Although it might work for her in this fantasy land, it actually minimizes the sexual intimacy part. The intimacy part. Sexual mm-hmm. fulfillment, rock solid.
Sure.
But the intimacy, that's the part that creates the closeness and the security. So I wouldn't say it's bad, wrong. I'm going to say, is it going to really help create the kind of relationship that you truly want? Because if she keeps doing that, is she really going to be looking forward to being with him? That's going to kind of start eating at the fiber of
right.
their relationship. So although it works sexually, it's not. I don't know if it's going to work relationally.
So what's the solution so that she can also climax?
You betcha. One of the things is she needs to start associating the feeling with him. Mm-hmm. She's got the physics down. Physiology, perfect. Great. She can let herself go and climax. But it seems to me there's a psychological and emotional intimacy barrier there that's not letting her surrender to him. She's surrendering to Ryan Reynolds. That's who she's surrendering
right.
to, not Honey Buns.
Right.
I know, you know what I'm saying, Richie? I'm thinking about him too. So, you know what I'm saying? So if we overcome that by associating, you know, being present. They talk mm-hmm. about being mindful. Where are you? Who are you with? What are you experiencing right then and there? Eyes open, lights on, connecting with that person. You compare the climax she has, thinking of Ryan Reynolds. Ryan, if you're listening, this is all about you, baby. No.
That's Brother Reynolds.
If you compare that, she might go, oh, that was really nice. But when she compares that to the sexual experience, the orgasm she has when she is with her husband, the duration of the feel good will last so much longer. The commitment, the super glue of sex now creates greater unity.
Okay, I got another question. I just don't like having sex from a woman.
Right.
So what do you do?
Well, she can stay that way. She's entitled to.
Sure.
But what are the consequences?
Mm-hmm.
She might not like sex. The next question would be, well, do you have sex anyway? Because she may not like sex and have it anyway, because that happens quite a bit, mm-hmm. right? So she's
but
there.
Doesn't that create some sort of resentment where it's like, listen, I don't like this. This is for you.
Right.
I don't enjoy this.
Right. You know what's going to happen. They're going to get more and more. She's going to get resentful.
Right.
Because she's going to feel used. And she's just going, oh, this is so uncomfortable, which is going to get worse and worse and worse. Then she's going to start to hold back even more. Well, if he's kind of going, well, what's going on? He's going to start to feel offended, hurt. And then because that sexual need for the relationship is absent, now we start to fall apart. The foundation starts to crumble. The reason why a lot of women don't like sex is because they're not enjoying sex. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Sure. So what do you do? Hey, enjoy this. Right. What, you don't like this?
What's wrong with you, woman? Yeah. No.
I mean, almost. Right. It, I would think that it would bring a guy to be like, I'm trying my best.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Why ain't you like this?
Open up dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women don't even want to talk about it. They're afraid of the poor guy's ego is going to pop like a balloon and
right.
he's going to fall apart. And she's like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. So she'll have sex with him to stroke his ego, but she's not enjoying it. But a real guy, a real man wants to know what will work for her.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women don't know what works for them. And so they need to start having a dialogue. I was doing a presentation and a sweet woman rose her hand at the very end. And we're talking about how important it is to have a dialogue. And she goes, well, what if you don't know what you like? and they'd been married for 15 years. And it kind of breaks my heart because this is proof that we're not providing the information or the forum and opportunity to be able to discuss these things.
Right.
So if someone's not enjoying sex, they need, think about it. If I'm the woman and I'm not enjoying sex, what motivation would I have to get into it?
Right.
I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to start whining and complaining and start touching me all over. Oh, I better, it's been 3 days. I better start something, right?
3 days, jeez.
Yeah. Sorry, Rich, man. So if the consequences, if she doesn't embrace it, are going to be problematic for the relationship. And if the relationship isn't stable, then we have family instability, and then any problem that happens in the relationship now becomes worse. So really recognize what the problem is if she doesn't address it. So that would be some motivation. Number two, what if she gave herself permission to say, I'm going to figure this out for me? Because if sex is designed to be enjoyable, I got to figure this out. I'm missing out. Then she needs to start talking to her husband. And I believe there's absolute perfect reason to do self-exploration. What works? What doesn't work? Not as a replacement, okay, but as getting information. It's scary doing it by yourself. It's even scarier trying to figure it out with somebody who's got some expectations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important for women, if they are in that situation, start to think, what's the value of having a good sexual relationship with their husband, relationally and then physically?
Mm-hmm.
And eternally, if you want to go that far.
Sure.
And then go, I'm going to put some time and energy into helping this become an important part of my life. I mean, if you want to play an instrument, a musical instrument.
So to speak.
Yes. And you be able to play it well. It takes
practice. That's right.
Dedication. You can't just take one day a month and go, I'm going to be the best guitarist ever.
Yeah.
No. Your hands are going to be so sore that you're not going to ever want to play guitar again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have to be persistent and consistent in applying effort into that part of your life. So get some help, read some books, whatever.
How often is that situation due to like physical things or like abuse?
A lot. Yeah, because you've got educational component. Now you've got a sexual abuse issue.
Mm-hmm.
Totally messes up with a girl's wiring. And then you've got, there's physiological issues, vestibulitis, vaginismus. There's all sorts of things that can hinder good sexual relationship. And
so it could be none of this emotional thing.
It could be a physical
thing.
Hey,
you know what? This doesn't work the way that it's supposed to.
So do you recommend women go see their doctors?
Absolutely. Okay. That would be the first thing. When I talk with a woman who says, I don't enjoy sex, I'm going to find out why. If she says, well, you know what? It feels like someone just poking me with a hot poker. It is burning like crazy. And I'm thinking, okay, vaginismus or vestibulitis.
Right.
So I'm going to say, well, let's go talk to your doctor and let's just see if there's any, you know, abnormality there that we need to address. Because no matter what kind of emotional support he is, if there's physiological stuff going on, that's not going to cut it. And she's going to get more and more frustrated, and so is he.
Sure.
And they're going to fight about it.
So I realize this is a loaded question, but how often should couples be having sex?
As often as they like.
So,
yes. Yes.
Right.
As the
there you go.
Emo, please write that prescription. Right. When
healthy. What's healthy?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, if we want to just do statistical average,
yeah,
two times a week is the statistical average, about two.
Okay.
What about the Mormon average? Do we have a Mormon
yeah,
average?
Yeah, that's
I don't
what
know
I
if that's
know.
Any different, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, really. Because even though they're having sex, that doesn't mean they're enjoying it or not. And that's just an average. And so you have to think, okay, how often have you had sex in the first year of your marriage? Right? And you think, okay, now you spread that out. I remember my mom saying, if we put a bean in the jar every time we had sex the first year,
and then took one out,
we'd still be taking them out. So, you know, but if we say an average of two times a week is just kind of the average, research shows that a low sex marriage, so a problematic marriage, is less than, so it's two times a month. So every other week is a low sex marriage. And a no sex marriage is less than, and it's not zero sex, it's less than once a month.
Wow.
So if you're not having sex regularly, maybe once or twice, maybe three times a week, then look at how that's impacting the relationship. Is the relationship being affected in an adverse way? Don't go, well, research says two times. Sweetie, it's been once. Sure, hurry up and keep up with the score.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't about that. It's because we look at, you know, men and women and go, you know, what if a guy's going, sex once a week is fabulous. You know, when I do it too much, it's not as enjoyable.
Sure.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I have some men and women go, if I could have sex every day, I would. It'd be great. And so now it's they do it every day. So there's not a prescription for what's good. Mm-hmm. It's what works for the couple. Hmm. And usually you have some problems when there's a high sexual desire discrepancy. In other words, let's say the guy wants it all the time and the girl never wants it. Now we have a problem. Mm-hmm. So now they have to go, okay, what's reasonable? And if the guy wants it all the time, my first inclination is he's using sex for more than connecting with his wife. He's using it to deal with stress. He's using it to deal with happiness. He's dealing with boredom. He's dealing with, you say what I'm saying?
Right.
That's right. So he's using it for so many things other than connecting. And if he can find other ways to be able to get his needs met that are outside of sex, then sex maintains its specialness. And if the wife knows that she's not the panacea for all of his issues, mm-hmm. then she's like, okay, I'm more into it because I just can't be there every time.
Yeah. Okay, so sex, so we talked about sex being painful. So if it's painful, go talk to
a doctor, find out what's going on there. And I got stories after stories, but if there's a problem and there's pain, then talk to the doctor, see if there's anything physiologically going on. If there's nothing physiologically going on, then go see a sex therapist. You're going to need some help to walk you through it. Look, being in a sex therapy office, from what I'm experiencing with my clients, it's like one of the coolest places to be. You finally get to take all the walls down and be a real person and not be judged mm-hmm. and be accepted for who you truly are. That's therapeutic in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So if you find yourself having a difficult time being able to have sex and there's a lot of pain, you don't have to stay like that. Go get some help. Sex therapists are special. I say that in general because they care about the nitty-gritty of a relationship.
Right.
But all sex therapists are not created equal. So go in with an open mind and make sure that you have a good fit. If you don't have rapport, you're not going to have good therapy. So interview, kind of. You should be able to go to a sex therapist and say, I want to see if this is going to work. I want to shop around. Mm-hmm. Can we do that? Can you kind of tell me what your philosophy is going to be? How we do this? So if you're kind of like going, I'm really not into pornography, and the first person says, well, on Oprah, you should use pornography. That'll get you in the mood. And you're like going, okay, well, they said use porn. Let's use porn. Woo! You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
free pass.
So find someone that really fits for you and you feel like you can connect value wise. And then, dive in because really, you got nothing to lose other than a crappy relationship. You know, you have nothing to lose other than getting rid of the pain. So there are things you can do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stay stuck like that.
A couple questions here. How do committed couples cope successfully with finding each other becoming sexually incompatible as they age?
Okay, this is one of those things that in Mormon culture we don't talk much about. We talk a lot about the importance of stability, commitment, sensitivity, emotional closeness. We don't talk about eroticism.
Right.
We're like, oh, eroticism. You're getting out the glossy magazines, right? But eroticism is helping the relationship stay fresh and good. Think about it like food. If I had, roast potatoes, every day... I'd be like going, I am sick and tired of roast potatoes, even though that's my favorite thing, right?
I love roast potatoes.
Yes. So if I'm, if I have, tacos, spaghetti, pizza, roast potatoes, Thai food, I don't have to always try something new to have variety.
Right.
You can have plenty of variety because when it comes Taco Tuesday, I'm like, yeah, I love tacos, even though every week I'm having tacos.
Sure.
So... accommodate the palate sexually, similarly like you would do for food. Have variety, have some spontaneity, but it doesn't always have to be novel. You don't have to have novelty to make it exciting.
Okay. And I was going to ask that because a lot of people, they want to be creative, mm-hmm. but then some people are taught that you can't bring in other things to make sex creative.
Right. And I'm saying you can do as long as it's a couple's thing. For example, imagine someone, a woman who has never climaxed at all. And so she's talking to some friends and her friends say, you know what? I used to have that same problem, but I got the silver bullet vibrator and I never knew I could feel like that. And now that I can feel like that, I know what to do and how to do that. And so other people would go, oh my gosh, you're bringing something else in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Look, these are aids to help strengthen the relationship. If we use all of these things, lingerie, okay? Toys. If we're using these things as an aid for the relationship closeness that doesn't distract, now we're creating the intimacy part of the sex instead of just having sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about the guys who feel like, oh, what, I'm not enough?
Right.
As far as the vibrators or
right.
know, toys, things like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Why can't it just be
I'm
me?
I'm being
why
replaced.
Exactly.
Right.
Remember, it's an aid, not a replacement. So what we want to do is we want to help her get in touch with what that feeling is. She needs to recognize, oh, that's how I do this. Because there's a moment with women that they have to surrender. They have to feel that feeling and let go. So in that situation, there's this kind of this mind thing that goes on in their minds. But if the stimulation isn't adequate, and think about it, the anatomy isn't set up right for stimulation through intercourse. Mm-hmm. So if we understand that and appreciate that, we incorporate things to make sure that the stimulation that she's experiencing, the guy's anatomy is fine, right?
Right.
It's working great. And she's like going, this is nice. I like the closeness, but I've really never felt that feeling, that
right.
tickle. So now she's experiencing the feeling that begins to grow and it's being used because they're using an aid to help them. People can get stuck with that. And that becomes a replacement. That's mm-hmm. why I said we need to use it as an aid. So now that she's, let's say they use that as a step into the next thing. So now that she's aroused, she's feeling really good. And now I don't know how deep we want to go into this, but during intercourse, they can use that intermittently, okay?
Right.
To make sure that she's staying in that rhythm. She's getting adequate stimulation. If she doesn't have adequate stimulation, you'll lose her. Mm-hmm. So once she's got adequate stimulation, then she can ride that wave to climax. The big problem is maintaining stimulation and focus simultaneously so she can enjoy it. It's kind of scary for women who haven't experienced an orgasm.
What are some of the most common gaps in the information that Mormons come to marriage with that would help them and their partners be healthy, happy people?
One thing that I hear a lot of is anything goes in the bedroom, okay? Now, because...
And what I've been taught, and I was going to bring this up, but since it's kind of where you go, is it's so long as your partner's down with it,
right.
it's
goes.
All right.
Okay, mm-hmm. And that's where I want to kind of finish with, Rich, because what happens is there's sometimes guys usually feel a sense of entitlement.
Right.
I've been moral all my life, and now I get to eat at the buffet of sex anytime I want. Right?
Right.
Okay. That's a problem because if he's got that entitled attitude, he's going to be alone for a long time. Right.
Right?
So that's one of the attitudes that people come in with. Some guys do is they think, oh, okay, I've been living this life for so long, this moral life, that now I should be able to do anything and everything I want and she should just be along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Figuratively.
That might be, yeah, figuratively. That might be... sexually satisfying, but it is not going to be relationally satisfying. And then what happens is the more someone does to try to get the fulfillment through just sex alone, the more they need it and the less satisfied they're going to become. So there's no satiation. There's a sense of, okay, I took care of that thing, and then there's that emptiness again.
So if you could give three, four tips. People in their relationship, just lay it out.
All right.
Four
things. Let's see what I can say. Number one, permission. Give yourself permission to make this a really important part of your relationship. Then begin the dialogue. Have the conversation. Make this important. Look, you can't go to the gym once a week and think you're going to get buff. It ain't going to happen. You're not going to lose enough weight going to the gym once a week. This is going to be something you got to work on every day. I'm not saying you have to have sex every day, but imagine if sex was important every day.
Mm-hmm.
You cuddled. You made out. Okay, there's so many things you can do to make love without having intercourse.
Sure.
So we need to start increase, and that's probably the third thing, is we need to start opening our mind of what making love really is. But for guys, it's like, if we start kissing...
Then we're going to have sex.
We're going to have sex.
Yes.
And what does the woman do? I don't want to be kissing if it's always going to lead to that. Right?
Right.
And so what usually happens is the guy's physical affection is anchored to sex, intercourse, okay?
Right.
So she's washing dishes at the sink. He comes behind her, puts his arms around her. And what does she do?
She's like, ah.
Ah. Yeah. Ashley knows. She's heard her friends talk about this.
Yeah, this doesn't happen to me.
Right.
But.
And then he cops a feel, and what does she think? You stinking jerk. I'm washing my dishes and you... You know what I mean? But imagine the guy who does what I call stealth affection. He walks up behind her, puts his arms around her, nuzzles his nose right into her neck, gives her a kiss and says, "You totally rock. I am the luckiest guy in the world." And then escapes. with the wind.
she's like, wait a minute.
She's like, don't be leaving me hanging, man, right? That's what we want to do. We need to help men learn how to be sexual without using their penis.
Right.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sure. We've said about everything else.
So, and then the thing is make this a commitment for the rest of your lives. This is, if you don't keep working on it, it's like working out for 3 years and saying, oh, I'm done. Whew. I'm in such killer shape. And then, right, you turn into, you know, a bucket of
goo
sitting on the couch. I got to get in shape. One day I'm going to do that. So focus on making this an important part of your life. And I know a lot of women, a lot of men out there go, well, this shouldn't be the end all be all. At times, it should.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sex the number one priority sometimes. Not all the time, sometimes.
Now, let's get a little bit more about you. Anytime we have someone in the cultural hall, we ask them, do you have a calling right now?
I have a calling. I am the Ellerscorn presidency. I am the second counselor in the Ellerscorn presidency.
And what would your dream calling be? If you could pick.
You know what I would love to do? Not in the church. I would love to create a program training marriages on communication and intimacy. I would love that. I would love to put that online. Everybody, before they can get a marriage license,
they have to pass the test.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic
idea. So if you guys would help
me
lobby this, you know, look, in order for someone to get married, I mean, think about it. Right now, if you want to get divorced, you have to take a class.
You have to take a temple prep course to go to the temple. So now I think it's a great idea.
It should be mandated. You have to have sexual...
Drive a car, you have to take a class.
Right.
That's right.
And we should have a training for intimacy and communication. If we have that, we're going to prevent so many problems from happening down the road. We're going to save tons and tons of money. Society's going to be better off as a whole. And you know what? It's not that bad learning how to communicate and have sex good.
Right.
That's not a bad deal.
No, not at all. How can people get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you?
You bet. You can always email me.
We call that climbing up on the Ramy-umptum, by the way.
Is that it?
Yeah, climb on up.
Brothers and sisters. No, I'm kidding. If you want to contact me, I'd be happy to answer questions. You can go on, I have a website called changesyou.com. So changesyou.com. In that web, and that website, there's actually, there are several forums. There's like a forum on marital intimacy, marital communication. And so every week a new 5-minute video comes out. It's just a short video talking about the salient points that I would be talking about in a therapy session. Look, here are the issues you need to be aware of. And so there's the intimacy, parenting, a bunch of things. But if you just have a question for me, just email me at emilharker@gmail.com.
Which is emilharker@gmail.com.
You got it, Rich.
And do you do Facebook or Twitter? Can people follow you?
Yep. If you go on Facebook, go to, I think it's www.facebook.com/changesyou.
Okay. And is it like a page that people can go and like?
Yeah, they go in there.
Do you give advice on your status updates?
Yeah,
usually
if I do,
advice
I'll throw out, or if I do something like this, I'll post it on there. Or
great.
I'm on Channel 2 every like second and fourth week, so you can hear about communication and intimacy there. Oh, and if anybody would be willing, I'm writing a book called Good Girls Like Sex Too, okay? And what I'm doing is I'm interviewing 100 women, good girls. These are church-going girls that don't have sex with anybody else, just their husbands, and like sex. I'm doing it. So if you're interested, I'm going to post that on the, thanks Ashley, tell all your friends, you know. So what I want to do is I'm going to get 100 women. We're going to interview them online so they don't even have to tell me, you know. I don't know what their specific answers are going to be, but I'm collecting 100 women. I got 50 so far. I need 50 more. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to write this book that now you're going to get a profile of real women, what barriers they've had, and how they've overcome them so they can really enjoy sex too. So if you'd be willing to help me, go on the facebook.com/changesyou, and in there will be a little link. Click on the link, take the mini survey, and include yourself in it. Need 50 more.
Cool.
Awesome.
Last question for you. What is your favorite part of your faith?
Everything makes sense. Everything, with the gospel, everything makes sense. Like there are so many questions that people have, but the gospel has the answers. It's so nice to not have to go, I mean, there's so many questions, okay? Sure. Don't get me wrong. But no one has more answers than we do. It is so nice to have everything make sense. Everything fits into a perspective of the gospel. I love that part. I look at everything, and I'm always looking at different layers of things. And with a gospel perspective, everything makes sense.
Well, cool. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you'll travel home safely.
And for those who weren't able to listen to this podcast this week, that they'll be able to listen again next week. That they'll be healthy enough to listen again next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row of the Cultural Hall.